she said. It will not do. Ead looked into those resolute eyes, her fingers curled around the handle of her blade. We both serve the mother, Mita, she said. Let's see which one of us she favors. Little Moonlight reached the ground in the Lassian Basin, so dense was the canopy of trees. Loth paced the gloaming, wiping the sweat from his hands on his shirt, shivering as if with fever. The Ichneumon had led him through a labyrinth of passageways before emerging here. Loth had only understood that he was being rescued when they were breathing the warm air of the forest. The drink they had been giving him was at last wearing off. Now the Ichneumon was curled on a nearby rock, eyes fixed on the mouth of the cave. Loth had buckled on the saddle they had brought outside. Woven bags and saddle flasks were attached to it. Where is she? He was ignored. Loth wiped his upper lip with one hand and muttered a prayer to the Knight of Courage. He had not forgotten. They had tried to smoke it out of him, but the saint had always been there, in his heart. Tolgas had warned him against fighting, so he had prayed and waited for salvation. It had come in the form of the woman he had once known as Ead Durian. She was going to get them back to Innis. He believed it as much as he believed in the Knight of Fellowship. When the Ichneumon finally rose, it was with a growl. It bounded off to burrow between the roots of the tree and returned with an exhausted look in Ead. Her arm was draped around its neck, and she carried another woven bag on her shoulder. Loth ran to her. Ead. She was glossed with blood and sweat, her hair curling thickly around her shoulders. Loth, she said, we must leave now.
Lift her onto me, man of Innis.
The deep voice scared Loth half to death. When he saw where it had come from, he gaped. You can speak, he spluttered.
Yes, the Ichneumon said. The wolfish eyes went straight back to Ead. You are bleeding.
It will stop. We must go.
The sisters of the Priory will come for you ere long. Horses are slow and stupid. You cannot outstrip an Ichneumon without riding one.
She pressed her face into its fur. They will butcher you if we are caught. Stay here, Arilak, please.
No.
Its ears flinched.
I go where you go.
The Ichneumon bent its front legs. Ead looked up at Loth. Loth, she rasped, do you trust me still? He swallowed.
I don't know if I trust the woman you are, he admitted, but I trust the woman I knew.
Then ride with me, she said, cupping his cheek. And if I lose consciousness, keep riding northwest for Korvuga. Her fingers left blood on his face. Whatever you do, Loth, do not let them take this, even if you have to leave me behind.
Her hand was clenched around something at the end of a cord, a round white gemstone pressed into clay.
What is it? He murmured. She shook her head. Mustering his strength, Loth hoisted her into the saddle. He swung himself on, curled an arm about her, and pressed her back against his chest, grasping the Ichneumon with the other hand.
Hold on to me, he said against her ear. I will see us to Korvuga, as you have seen me here.
Chapter 47 South Arilak ran hard through the forest. Loth thought he had known his swiftness in the spindles, but it was all he could do to hold on as the Ichneumon leapt over twisted roots and creeks and between trees, lithe as a stone glancing off water. He dozed as Arilak took them further north, away from the thickness of the forest. His dreams took him first to that accursed tunnel in Iskarlin, where Kit must still lie, then farther, back to the map room at the estate, where his tutor was telling him about the history of the Domain of Lassia, and Margaret was sitting beside him. She had always been a diligent student, keen to learn about their ancient roots in the south. He had given up hope of ever seeing his sister again. Now, perhaps, there was a chance. The rise and fall of the sun, the pounding of paws against earth. When the Ichneumon stopped, Loth finally woke. He rubbed the sand from his eyes. A lake stretched across a dusty expanse of earth, a streak of sapphire under the sky. Water olifants bathed in its shallows. Beyond the lake were the great rocky peaks that guarded Nazeen, all the red-brown of baked clay. Mount Dinduru, the largest, was almost perfect in its symmetry. By noon, they were in the foothills. Arilak climbed a branched path up the nearest peak. When they were high enough to make his thighs quake, Loth risked a look down. Nazeen lay before them. The Lassian capital sat in the cradle of the Godsblades, surrounded by high sandstone walls. The mountains, taller and straighter than any in the known world, sliced its streets with shadow. An immense road stretched out beyond it, no doubt a trade route to the Ursir. Date palms and juniper trees lined streets that glistened in the sunlight. Loth spied the golden library of Nazeen, built of sandstone taken from the ruins of Yakala, connected by a walkway to the Temple of the Dreamer. Towering over it all was the palace of the Great Ongenu, where the High Ruler Kagudo and her family resided, set high above the houses on a promontory. The river Lays forked around its sacred orchard. Arilak sniffed out a shelter beneath a jut of rock, deep enough to protect them from the elements. "Why are we stopping?" Loth wiped sweat from his face. "Ea told us to keep riding for Korvuga." Arilak bent his front leg so Loth could dismount.
"The blade she was cut with was laced with a secretion from the ice leech. It stops the blood from clotting," he said. "There will be a cure in Nazeen."
Loth lifted Eard from the saddle. "How long will you be?" The Ichneumon did not reply. He licked Eard once across the brow before he disappeared. When Eard rose from her world of shadows, it was sundown. Her head was a thrice-stirred cauldron. She was dimly aware that she was in a cave, but had no memory of having got there. Her hand flinched to her collarbones. Feeling the waning jewel between them, she breathed again. Retrieving it had cost her. She remembered the steel of the blade and the sting of whatever foulness was on it as she grabbed the jewel from Mita. Fire had sparked from her fingers, setting the bed ablaze before she had rolled over the balustrade and into open sky. She had dropped like a cat and landed on a ledge outside the kitchen. Mercifully, it had been empty, leaving her escape route clear. Still, she had barely made it to Arilak and Loth before her strength gave out. Mita deserved a cruel death for what she had done to Zala, but Eard would not deliver it to her. She would not debase herself by murdering a sister. A hot tongue licked a curl back from her brow. She found herself almost nose to nose with Arilak.
"Where?"
she said hoarsely.
"The God's Blades."
"No." She sat up, biting back a groan when her midriff throbbed.
"You stopped," her voice strained. "You damned fool of the Red Damsels."
"It was this that let you bleed to death."
Arilak nosed the poultice on her belly.
"You did not tell us that the prioress coated her blade in the glean."
"I had no idea." She should have expected it. The prioress wanted her dead, but she could not do it herself without drawing suspicion. Better to slow her with blood loss than tell the Red Damsels their newly returned sister was a traitor and order them to kill her for it. Her own hands would be clean. Eard lifted the poultice. The wound was painful, but the mash of sabra flowers had leached the poison from it.
"Arilak," she said, sliding into Inish. "You know how quickly the Red Damsels hunt?"
Having Loth there made the language spring to her tongue.
"You are not supposed to stop for anything."
"High Ruler Kagudo keeps a supply of the remedy. Ichneumons do not let little sisters die."
Eard forced herself to breathe, to be calm. The Red Damsels were unlikely to be searching the God's Blades just yet.
"We must move on soon,"
Arilak said, with a glance at Loth.
"I will check it is safe."
Silence yawned after he left.
"Are you angry, Loth?"
Eard finally asked. He gazed at the capital. Torches had been lit in the streets of Nazeen, making it glimmer like embers beneath them.
"I should be," he murmured. "You lied about so much. Your name, your reason for coming to Innis, your conversion."
"Our religions are intertwined. Both oppose the Nameless One."
"You never believed in the saint."
"Well," he corrected himself,
"you did. But you think he was a brute and a craven who tried to press a country into accepting his religion."
"And demanded to marry Princess Clearlyn before he would slay the monster?"
"Yes."
"How can you say such a thing, Eard, when you stood in sanctuary and praised him?" "I did it to survive."
When he still refused to look at her, she said,
"I confess I am what you would call a sorceress, but no magic is evil. It is what the wielder makes it."
He risked a surly glance at her.
"What is it you can do?"
"I can drive away the fire of worms. I am immune to the draconic plague. I can create barriers of protection. My wounds heal quickly, I can move among shadows. I can make metal sing of death like no knight ever could.
Can you make fire of your own?
Yes.
She opened her palm, and a flame shivered to life.
Natural fire.
Again, and the flame blossomed silver.
Mage fire, to undo enchantments.
Once more, and it was red, so hot it made Loth sweat.
Worm fire.
Loth made the sign of the sword. Eid closed her hand, extinguishing the heresy.
Loth, she said, we must decide now whether we can be friends. We both need to be friends to Sabran if this world is to survive.
What do you mean? There is much you don't know. An understatement indeed. Sabran conceived a child with Arbrecht Lievelin, the High Prince of Mentandun. He was killed. I will tell you all later, she added when he stared. Not long after, a High Western came to Ascalon Palace, the White Worm they called it. She paused. Sabran had a miscarriage.
Saint, he said.
Sab.
His face was tight with sorrow.
I'm sorry I wasn't up there.
I wish you had been. Eid watched his face. There will be no other child, Loth. The Berethnet line is at an end. Worms are rising. Iskallen has all but declared war, and the Nameless One will rise again soon. I am sure of it.
Loth was beginning to look very sick.
The Nameless One?
Yes, he will come, Eid said, though not because of Sabran. It has naught to do with her. Whether there is a queen in Innis or a sun in the sky, he will rise.
Sweat dotted his brow.
I think I know a way to defeat the Nameless One, but first we must secure Virtudom. Should it fall to civil war, the Draconic Army and the Flesh King will make short work of it.
Eid pressed the poultice against her belly.
Certain members of the Duke Spiritual have abused their power for years. Now they know she will have no heir, I believe they will try to control Sabran, or even to usurp her.
By the Saint, Loth murmured. You warned Meg about the cupbearer. Do you know who it is?
No, all I had from Sigoso was that phrase.
At first, I thought it was the Night Hawk, he had admitted. But now I am all but certain that it is Igraine Crest. The twin cups are her badge.
Lady Igraine? But Sab loves her, Loth said, visibly stunned.
Besides, anyone who takes the Knight of Justice as their patron wears the goblets, and the cupbearer conspired with King Sigoso to murder Queen Rosarion.
Why would Crest do such a thing?
I don't know, Eid said frankly, but she recommended Sabran marry the chieftain of Ascadal. Sabran chose Lievelin instead, and then Lievelin was killed. As for the cutthroats...
It was you who killed them.
Yes, Eid said, deep in thought, but I have wondered if they ever meant to kill. Perhaps Crest always planned for them to be caught. Each invasion would have left Sabran more terrified. Her punishment for resisting the call of the childbed was the near-constant fear of death.
And the Queen Mother?
It has long been rumored at court that Queen Rosarion took Gian Harlow to her bed while she was wed to Prince Wilston, Eid said. Infidelity is against the teachings of the Knight of Fellowship. Perhaps Crest likes her queens to be obedient.
At this, Loth clenched his jaw.
So you mean for us to take a stand against Crest? He said, to protect Sabran.
Yes, and then to take a stand against a far older enemy.
Eid glanced towards the mouth of the cave.
Ascalon may lie in Innis. If we can find it, we can use it to weaken the Nameless One.
A bird called out from somewhere above their shelter. Loth passed her a saddle flask.
Eid, he said, you do not believe in the six virtues.
He looked her in the eye. Why risk everything for Sabran? She drank.
It was a question she should have asked herself a long time ago. Her feelings had come like a flower on a tree, a bud, gently forming, and just like that, an undying blossom.
I realized, she said, after a period of silence, that she had been spoon-fed a story from the day she was born. She had been taught no other way to be, and yet I saw that despite everything, some part of her was self-made. This part, small as it appeared at first, was forged in the fire of her own strength and resisted her cage. And I understood that this part was made of steel. This part was who she truly was. She held his gaze. She will be the queen that Innis needs in the days that are to come.
Loth moved to sit beside her. When he touched her elbow, she looked up at him.
I'm glad we found each other again, Ead Durian. He paused. Eadaz Uknaara. Ead rested her head on his shoulder. With a sigh, he wrapped an arm around her.
Arilak returned then, startling them both.
The great bird is on the wing, he said. The red damsels draw near.
Loth got to his feet at once. A strange calm washed over Ead as she took up her bow and quiver.
Arilak, we cross the Scorchlands to Iskallen. We do not stop, she said, until we reach Korivooga.
Loth mounted. She handed him the cloak, and when she climbed on, he wrapped it around them both. Arilak slid and pawed his way to the foot of the mountain and crept out of its shadow to glimpse the lake. Paspa was circling in silence overhead. It was dark enough to cover their escape. They moved behind the other godsblades. When there was nowhere else to hide, Arilak struck out from the mountains and ran. The Scorchlands of Lassia, where the city of Jotenya had once stood, stretched across the north of the country. During the grief of ages, the land had been stripped bare by fire, but new grasses had reclaimed it, and wing-leaved trees spaced far apart had risen from the ashes. The terrain began to shift. Arilak gathered speed until his paws were flying over yellow grass. Ead clung to his fur. Her belly still ached, but she had to stay alert, to be ready. The other Ichneumons would have picked up on their scent by now. The stars spiraled and shimmered above them, embers in a sky like char. Different to the ones that peppered the night sky in Innis. More trees sprang up from the earth. Her eyes were dry from the onslaught of wind. Behind her, Loth was shivering. Ead drew the cloak more tightly around them both, covering his hands, and allowed herself to imagine the ship that would carry them from Korivooga. An arrow whipped past Arilak, just missing him. Ead turned to see what they were facing. There were six riders, red flames, each astride an Ichneumon. The white belonged to Nyrouge. Arilak growled and pushed himself faster. This was it. Mustering her strength, Ead slipped free of the cloak, grasped Loth by the shoulder, and swung herself behind him so her back was against his. Her best chance was to wound the Ichneumons. Arilak was fast, even among his own kind, but the white could outrun him. As she knocked an arrow, she remembered a younger Nyrouge, boasting about how swiftly her mount could cross the Lassian Basin. First, she allowed herself to adjust to Arilak. When she knew the cadence of his footfalls, she lifted the bow. Loth reached behind him and grasped her hips, as if afraid she would fall. Her arrow sliced over the grass, straight and true. At the last moment, the white Ichneumon jumped over it. Her second shot went awry when Arilak cleared the carcass of a wild hound. They could not outrun this. Neither could they stop and fight. Two mages she could take, perhaps three, but not six red damsels, not with her injury. Loth would be too slow, and the other Ichneumons would make meat of Arilak. As she drew back her bowstring for the third time, she sent a prayer to the mother. The arrow pierced the front paw of an Ichneumon. It collapsed, taking its rider with it. Five left. She was preparing to shoot again when an arrow punched into her leg. A strangled shout tore out of her. Ead! At any moment, another arrow could lame Arilak. And that would be the end of it for all of them. Nyrouge was spurring on her Ichneumon. She was close enough now for Ead to see her ochre eyes and the hard line of her mouth. Those eyes had no hatred in them, just pure, cold resolve, the look of a hunter set on her quarry. She lifted her bow and leveled the arrow at Arilak. That was when fire ripped across the Scorchlands. The eruption of light almost blinded Ead. The nearest trees burst into flame. She looked up, searching for its origin, as Loth let out a wordless cry. Shadows were darting above them, winged shadows with whip-like tails. Wyverlings. They must have strayed from the little mountains, hungry for meat after centuries of slumber. In moments, Ead had sent an arrow into the eye of the nearest. With a soul-chilling screech, it crashed headlong into the grass, just missing the red damsels who parted around it. Three of them rallied against the wyverlings, while Nyrouge and another continued their pursuit. As a skeletal beast swooped low and snapped at them, Arilak stumbled. Ead twisted, heart pitching hard into her throat, fearing a bite. An arrow had skimmed his flank. "You can make it," she spoke to him in Selene. "Arilak, keep running, keep going." Another wyverling tumbled from above and slammed into a fan tree in front of them. As it fell, the pulled-up roots groaning in protest, Arilak weaved out of the way and charged past it.
He had smelled brimstone from the flesh of the creature as it let out a long death rattle.
One of the riders was getting closer. Her ichneumon was black, its teeth like knives. They all saw the wyverling a moment too late. Fire rained from above and consumed the red damsel, setting her cloak aflame. She rolled to the ground to smother it. Fire churned the grass and reached for Arilak. Ead threw out her hand. Her warding deflected the heat as a shield did a mace. Loth cried out as the flames clawed for him. The wyverling swerved away with a shriek, swallowing its fire. The red damsels were in chaos, hunted and harrowed, circled by the creatures. Ead turned, looking for Nyrouge. The white ichneumon lay wounded. A wyvern was bearing down on Nyrouge, its jaws flushed with the blood of her mount. Without hesitating, Ead fitted her last arrow to her bowstring. She hit the wyvern in the heart. Loth pulled her back down to the saddle. Ead glimpsed Nyrouge staring after them, one arm over her belly, before Arilak spirited them away from the trees, into the darkness. A smell of burning. Loth wrapped the cloak around Ead again. Even when they were far away, she could still see the tongues of fire in the Scorchlands, glowing like the eyes of the Nameless One. Her head rolled forward, and she knew no more. She woke to Loth saying her name. The grass and fire and trees were gone. Instead, there were houses built from coral rag, crows on the rooftops, and stillness. Utter stillness. This was a town that had buried more than it still had living souls. A ship with discolored sails and a figurehead shaped like a seabird in flight was waiting in the harbor. A silent harbor on the edge of the west. Dawn stained the sky a delicate shadow of pink, and the black salt water stretched before them. Corvuga. Chapter 48. East. The trees of Feather Island had finally stopped burning. Rain fell in fat drops to quench their branches, which hacked a sickly yellow smoke. The little shadow girl walked from her place of exile and sank her hands into the earth. The comet ended the great sorrow, but it has come to this world many times before. Once, many moons ago, it left behind two celestial jewels, each infused with its power, solid fragments of itself. She held up the jewel that had been in her side, the jewel she had protected and nurtured with her body, and the rain washed it clean. Mud and water dripped onto her feet. With them, our ancestors could control the waves. Their presence allowed us to hold on to our strength for longer than we could before. The jewel shone in the cup of her hands. It was as dark a blue as the abyss, as her heart. They have been lost for almost 1,000 years. Not lost, hidden. Tane held the jewel to her breast. In the eye of the storm, where unbreakable promises had been sealed before the gods in times long past, she made a vow that even if it took her until her dying day, she would find Nyimethun, free her from captivity, and make her a gift of this jewel. Even if it took her a lifetime, she would reunite the dragon with what had been stolen. Part 4. Thine is the Queendom. Why do you not inhale essences of moon and stars, con your spirit texts of gold? Lucientzi. Chapter 49. West. Loth stood on the deck of the Bird of Truth. His heart was leaden as he watched Innis draw closer. Melancholy. That was the first word that came to mind when he beheld its dowly coast. It looked as if it had never seen the touch of the sun or heard a joyful song. They were sailing towards Albatross Roost, the westernmost settlement in Innis, which had once been the heart of trade with Iskallen. If they rowed hard, rested as little as possible, and met with no brigands, they might make it from here to Ascalon in a week. Ead kept watch beside him. Already she looked a little less alive than she had in Lassia. The Bird of Truth had sailed past Qual Bay on its way to Innis. Anchored ships guarded it, but through a spyglass they glimpsed the fledgling naval arm of the Draconic Army. King Sagoso would soon be ready to invade, and Innis would need to be ready to repel him. Ead had said nothing at the sight, only turned an open hand towards the 5 ships at anchor, and fire, born of nothing, had roared up their masts. She had watched it devour them all with no expression,
orange light flickering in her eyes.
Loth was shaken back into the present as a bitter gust of wind made him huddle deeper into his cloak.
Innes, his breath steamed white and thick. I never thought to see you again.
Ead laid a hand on his arm.
Meg never gave up on you, she said. Neither did Sabran.
After a moment, he covered her hand with his. A wall stood between them at the start of their journey. Loth had been ill at ease around her, and Ead had left him to brood. Slowly, though, their old warmth had crept back. In their miserable cabin on the Bird of Truth, they had shared stories of the past few months. They had avoided any more conversation about religion, likely that they would never agree on the matter. For now, however, they had the same desire to see Virtudom survive. Loth scratched at his chin with his free hand. He misliked his beard, but Ead had said they ought to disguise themselves when they reached Ascalon, since they were both barred from court.
Would that I could have burned every one of those ships, Ead folded her arms. I must be cautious with my Sidon. It might be years before I taste of the tree again.
He burned 5, Loth said. 5 fewer for Sigoso.
You look less afraid of me now than you did then. The blossom ring glinted on her finger. He had seen other sisters of the Priory wearing one.
All of us have shadows in us, he said. I accept yours. He placed a hand over her ring, and I hope you will also accept mine. With a tired smile, she threaded her fingers between his, gladly.
The smell of fish and rotting seaweed soon rode on the wind. The Bird of Truth docked with some trouble in the harbour, and its tired passengers decanted onto the quay. Loth held out an arm to help Ead. She had sported a limp for only a few days, even though the arrow had gone clean through her thigh. Loth had seen knights-errants weep for lesser hurts. Arilac would leave the ship once everyone had departed. Ead would call for him when the time was right. They walked down the jetty towards the houses. When Loth saw the sweet bags swaying in their doorways, he stopped. Ead was looking at them too.
"What do you suppose is in those?" she asked.
"Dried hawthorn flowers and berries, a tradition from long before the foundation of Ascalon, to ward away any evil that might taint the house." Loth wet his lips. "I have never seen them hanging in my lifetime."
Clags stuck to their boots as they pressed on. Soon, every dwelling they passed had a sweet bag outside.
"You said these were ancient ways," Ead mused. "What was the religion of Innes before the 6 virtues?"
"There was no official religion, but from what little the records tell us, the common saw the hawthorn as a sacred tree."
Ead withdrew into a brooding silence. They clambered over a dry stone wall onto the cobblestones of the main street. The only stable in the settlement yielded 2 sickly horses. They rode side by side. Rain battered their backs as they passed half-frozen fields and sodden flocks of sheep. While they were still in the province of the marshes, where brigands were rare, they made the decision to keep riding through the night. By dawn, Loth was saddle-sore, but awake. Ahead of him, Ead held her horse at a canter. Her body seemed wrought with impatience. Loth wondered if she was right, if Igraine Crest had been manipulating the Innish court from behind the throne. Whittling Sabran down to her last nerve, making her afraid to sleep in the dark, taking a loved one for each of her sins. The thought stoked a fire in his belly. Sabran had always looked to Crest first during her minority, and trusted her. He spurred the horse to catch up with Ead. They passed a village raised by fire, where a sanctuary coughed gouts of smoke. The poor fools had built their houses with thatched roofs.
"Worms," Loth murmured.
Ead brushed at her wind-torn hair. "Doubtless the High Westerns are commanding their servants to intimidate Sabran. They must be waiting for their master before they attack in earnest. This time the Nameless One will lead his armies himself." At sunfall, they came upon a dank little inn beside the River Catkin. By now, Loth was so tired he could scarce keep upright in the saddle. They stabled the horses and made their way into the hall, shivering and drenched to the bone. Ead kept her hood up and went to see the innkeeper. Loth was tempted to stay in the hall by the crackling fire, but there was too great a risk that they would be recognized. When Ead had secured a candle and a key, Loth took them and went upstairs. The room they were assigned was cramped and draughty, but it was better than the squalid cabin on the Bird of Truth. Ead entered with their supper. Her brow was pinched.
"What is it?"
Loth asked. I listened to some conversations downstairs. Sabran has not been seen since her public appearance with Lievelin, she said. As far as people know, she is still with child. But the dearth of news, coupled with the draconic incursions, has left her subjects uneasy. You said she was some way into her pregnancy when she miscarried. Were she still with child, she might have taken her chamber for the Lion Inn by now, Loth pointed out. A perfect excuse for her absence. Yes, perhaps she even colluded with it, but I do not think the traitors within the Duke's spiritual intend to let her continue to rule. Eard set down their supper and hung her cloak to dry over a chair. Sabran foresaw this. She is in mortal danger, Loth. She is still the living descendant of the saint. The people will not rally behind any of the Duke's spiritual while she lives. Oh, I think they would. If they knew she cannot give them an heir, the commons would believe that Sabran is responsible for the coming of the Nameless One. Eard sat at the table. That scar on her belly, and what it represents, would strip her of legitimacy in many of their eyes. She is still a Berethnet, and the last of her line. The innkeeper had provided them with two bowls of grizzly pottage and a hunk of stale bread. Loth forced down his share and chased it with the ale. I am going to wash, Eard said. While she was gone, Loth lay down on his pallet and listened to the rain. Igraine Crest was a tick on his thoughts. In his childhood, he had seen her as a comforting figure, stern but kind. She had radiated a sense that everything would be well. Yet he knew she had burdened Sabran in the 4 years of her minority. Even before that, when she was a young princess, Crest had hammered into her a need for temperance, for perfection, for devotion to duty. During those years, Sabran had not been permitted to speak with any children but Roslaine and Loth, and Crest had always been near at hand, watching her. Though Prince Wilston had been protector of the realm, he had been too deep in mourning to raise his daughter. Crest had taken charge of that. And there had been one incident, before the Queen Mother had died. He recalled a freezing afternoon, 12-year-old Sabran on the edge of Cheston Forest, folding a snowball in her gloved hands, her cheeks pink. Both of them laughing until it hurt. After, they had clambered up one of the snow-clad oaks and huddled together on a knotted branch, much to the consternation of the Knights of the Body. They had climbed almost to the top of that tree, so high they had been able to see into the Briar House. And there had been the Queen Rosarian in a window, visibly furious, a letter in her fist. With her had been Igraine Crest, hands behind her back. Rosarian had stormed away. The only reason Loth remembered it so clearly was because Sabran had fallen from that tree a moment later. It was some time before Iad returned, her hair damp from the river. She removed her boots and settled on the other pallet. Iad, Loth said, do you regret leaving the Priory? Her gaze was on the ceiling. I have not left, she said. All I do for the mother, to glorify her name. She closed her eyes. But I hope, I pray that my path will bend southward again some day. Hating the pain in her voice, Loth reached for her, a careful brush of his thumb along her cheekbone. I am glad, he said, that it bends westward this day. She returned his smile. Loth, she said, I did miss you. They were riding again before the sun rose in the morning, and on they rode for days. A snowstorm had blown in, slowing their horses, and one night brigands set upon them, demanding all their coin. Alone, Loth would have been overwhelmed, but he had put up such a spirited fight that they retreated. There was no more time for sleep. Iad was in her saddle again before the brigands were out of sight. It was all Loth could do to keep up with her. They turned northeast at Crow Coppice and galloped up the South Pass, keeping their heads down as they joined the wagons, pack horses, and coaches moving towards Ascalon. And finally, by owlight, they arrived. Loth slowed his horse. The spires of Ascalon were black against the evening sky. Even in the rain, this city was the beacon of his heart. They rode on to Berethnet Mile. Fresh snow was a broadcloth on it, as yet untrampled. At its end, far away, loomed the wrought iron gates of Ascalon Palace. Even in the gloaming, Loth could see the damage to the Dern Tower. He had almost not believed that Fyadel had been upon it. He could smell the river limber. The bells of the Sanctuary of Our Lady were ringing. I want to ride past the palace, he had said, to see if there are increased defences. Loth nodded. Each ward of the city began at its gatehouse.
Queenside, the closest to the palace, had been the most impressive, tall and gilded, carved with likenesses of past queens. As they neared it, the street, usually busy at dusk as people flocked to Orison's, quietened. The snow beneath the gatehouse was stained dark. When Loth looked up, the feeling left his face. High above them, two severed heads were mounted on pikes. One was unrecognizable, little more than a skull. The other had been tarred and parboiled, but the features slumped with decay, ears and nose leaking rot, flies on pallid skin. He might not have recognized her if not for the hair, long and red, streaming like blood. Trude, he had breathed. Loth could not tear his gaze from the head, from that swaying hair, grotesquely animate. Once, he and Sabran and Roslane had all gathered by the fire in the privy chamber and listened to Arbella Glenn tell them about Sabran the Fifth, the only tyrant of the House of Berethnet, who had adorned every finial on the palace gates with the heads of those who had displeased her. No queen had dared to raise her ghost by doing it again. Quickly, Ea turned her horse, follow me. They rode to the ward of Southerly Wharf, where silk merchants and clothiers reigned. They soon reached the Rose and Candle, one of the finest inns in the city, where they handed their horses to an ostler. Loth stopped to retch. Vomit seethed in his belly. Loth, Ead ushered him indoors. Hurry, I know the innkeeper here. We will be safe. Loth no longer remembered what it was to be safe. The stench of rot was etched into his throat. An attendant led them inside and knocked on a door. A ruddy-faced woman in a boxy doublet answered it. When she saw Ead, her eyebrows shot up.
Well, she said, recovering, you ought to come in.
She ushered them into her quarters. As soon as the door was closed, she embraced Ead.
Dear girl, it's been a very long time, she said, her voice hushed. What in damson are you doing on the streets?
We had no choice, Ead drew back. Our common friend told me you would give me shelter if I should ever need it.
The promise stands.
The woman inclined her head to Loth.
Lord Arthur Loth, welcome to the Rose and Candle.
Loth wiped his mouth. We thank you for your hospitality, good wife. We need a room, Ead said. Can you help?
I can. But have you only just arrived in Ascalon?
When they nodded, she took a roll of parchment from the table.
Look.
Ead unravelled it. Loth read over her shoulder.
In the name of Queen Sabran, Her Grace, the Duchess of Justice, offers a reward of 18,000 crowns for the capture of Ead Durian, a low-born southerner in the guise of a lady, wanted alive for sorcery, heresy, and high treason against Her Majesty. Curling black hair, dark brown eyes. Report any sighting at once to a city guard.
The heralds have read your name and description every day, the innkeeper said. I trust those you met in the yard, but you must speak to no one else. And be gone from this city as soon as you can. She shivered. Something is not right in the palace. They said that child was a traitor, but I cannot think Queen Sabran would execute one so young.
Ead handed the notice back. There were two heads, she said. Whose was the other?
Bess Weald. Wicked Bess, they call her now.
The name meant nothing to Loth, but Ead nodded. We cannot leave the city, she stated. We are about most important business. The innkeeper blew out a breath.
Well, she said, if you want to risk staying, I've added to the ambassador that I would help you on your way.
She picked up a candle. Come. She led them up a staircase. Music and laughter echoed from the hall. The innkeeper opened one of the doors and handed Ead the key.
I shall have your belongings brought up.
Thank you. I will not forget this, and neither will His Excellency, Ead told her. We will also need clothes and weapons if you can manage it.
Of course.
Loth took the candle from the innkeeper before he joined Ead, who bolted the door. The chamber boasted one bed, a roaring fire, and a copper bath, full and steaming. Bess Weald was the merchant who shut Lee Evelyn, Ead swallowed. This is Crest.
Why would she have murdered Lady Trude?
To silence her. Only Trude Sabran and myself knew that Bess Weald worked for someone called the Cupbearer, and Corm, she added after a moment. Crest is covering her spore. My head would have been up there too sooner or later if I had not left court. She paced the room. Crest could not have executed Trude without Sabran knowing.
Surely death warrants must have a royal signature.
No, the signature of whomsoever holds the Duchy of Justice is also valid on a death warrant, Loth said, but only if the sovereign is unable to sign with her own hand. The implication settled over them both, heavy with portent.
We need to get into the palace, tonight, Eid said, frustration mounting in her voice. I must speak with someone, in another ward.
Eid, no, this entire city is looking for... I know how to evade discovery.
Eid put her hood back up. Lock the door behind me. When I get back, we will make a plan. She paused to kiss his cheek on the way out.
Fear not for me, my friend.
And she was gone. Loth undressed and sank into the copper bath. All he could do was think about the head staked on the gatehouse. The promise of an Innis he could not recognize. An Innis without his queen. He battled sleep for as long as he could, but days of riding in the cold had taken their toll. When he tumbled into bed, he dreamed not of severed heads, but of the Dormata Morosa. She came to him, naked, with eyes full of ash, and her kiss tasted of wormwood.
You left me, she breathed. You left me to die, just like you left your friend.
When a knock finally came, he jerked awake.
Loth!
He groped for the bolt. Eid was outside. He stood aside to let her into the chamber. I have our way in, she said. We will go with the water folk. They crewed the barges and wherries that crossed the river Limber every day, taking people and goods from one side to the other. I assume you have more friends among them.
One, she confirmed.
A shipment of wine is being taken to the Privy Stair for the Feast of High Winter. He has agreed that we can join the water folk. That will get us inside.
And when we are, I mean to find Sabran.
Eid looked at him. If you would prefer to stay here, I will go in alone.
No, Loth said. We go together.
They set out dressed like merchants, armed to the chin under their cloaks. Soon, they entered the ward of Fizwich by bridge and slipped down the wherry stairs on Delphin Street. The stairs were squeezed alongside a tavern, the Grey Grimalkin, where the waterfolk drank after a long day on the Limber. The tavern faced the east wall of Ascalon Palace. Loth followed Eid. Their riding boots crunched through the shells on the riverbank. He had never set foot in this part of the city. Fizwich by bridge had a reputation for knavery. Eid approached one of the men outside the tavern.
My friend, she said, well met.
Mistress,
the man was grubby as a rat but sharp-eyed, do you still wish to join us?
If you'll have us.
I said I would. He glanced at the tavern. Wait by the barge. Need to fish some of the others from their cups.
Nearby, the barge in question was being loaded with barrels of wine. Loth walked to the edge of the river and watched candles flicker to life in the windows of the Alabastrine Tower. He could only just see the top of the Queen Tower, the royal apartments benighted.
Tell me, he muttered to Eid, what does Ambassador Uk Ispah do to make your friends so agreeable?
He pays the innkeeper a pension. As for this man, Chassa covered his gambling debts, she said. He calls them the friends of the priory. The waterfellow shepherded his associates from the tavern. When the last of the wine was loaded into the barge, Loth and Eid got in and found themselves a place on a bench. Eid pulled on a flat cap and tucked every curl inside. Each waterfellow grasped an oar and rowed. The Limber was wide and swift-flowing. It took them some time to reach the landing. The privy stair led up to a postern in the palace wall, designed to be a secret way for the royal family to leave. Sabran never used her pleasure barge, but her mother had always been out on the river, waving at the people, skimming her fingers through the water. Loth found himself wondering if Queen Rosarian had ever used the stair to escape for trysts with Gian Harlow. He was no longer sure if he should give credence to that rumour. His every belief had been bruised and battered. Perhaps nothing he had thought about this court had been true. Or perhaps this was a test of faith. They followed the waterfolk up the steps. On the other side of the wall, Loth caught his first glimpse of the three knights-errants who blocked their way. Eid pulled Loth into an alcove to the left, and they crouched behind the well.
"Good evening to you all," one of the knights-errants said. "You have the wine?"
"Aye, sirs." The head waterfellow doffed his cap. 60 barrels.
"Take them to the great kitchen. But first, your fellows will need to show us their faces. All of you, lower your hoods and remove your caps."
The waterfolk did as they were told.
"Good. Be on your way, the knight-errant said. The barrels were duly carried up the stairs. He had crept towards the mouth of the alcove, only to withdraw. One of the knight-errants was coming down the steps. When he thrust his torch into their hiding place, a voice said, "What's this?" The flame came closer. "Are we defying the Knight of Fellowship in here?" Then the knight-errant saw Loth, and he saw Eard, and under the shadow cast by his helm, Loth saw his mouth open wide to raise the alarum. That was when a knife sliced across his throat. As blood sprayed, Eard threw him into the well. Three heartbeats, and he hit the bottom. Chapter 50. West. She had hoped not to kill anyone in the palace. If there had been more time, Eard might have candled the man. She retrieved the torch and let it fall into the well. She wiped the blood from her knife. "Find Meg and hide in her quarters," she said quietly. "I want to scout the palace." Loth was staring at her as if she were a stranger. She gave him a push up the steps. "Hurry! They will search everywhere when they find the body." He went. Iad followed him before pairing away. She crossed the courtyard with the apple tree and pressed her back into the lime-washed wall of the great kitchen. She waited until a detail of guards had gone past before she slipped into the passage that led to the sanctuary royal. Two more knights-errant, both in black surcoats and armed with partisans, stood outside its doors. She candled them both. Mother willing, they would wake up too addled to report what had happened. Inside, she hid behind a pillar and gazed into the gloom. As always, many courtiers had gathered for orisons. Voices rang to the vaulted ceiling. Sir Bran was nowhere to be seen. Neither was Margaret. Eard took note of how the worshippers were sitting. Usually, they would huddle on the benches in the spirit of fellowship. Tonight, however, there was clear-cut faction. Retainers in full livery. Black and Murray, the twin goblets embroidered on their tabards. "Once, you would have seen Combe's retainers strutting about in his livery," Margaret had told her, "as if their first loyalty were not to their queen." "Now," the arch-sanctarian said, once the hymn was finished, "we pray to the Knight of Generosity for Her Majesty, who prefers to pray in seclusion at this most sacred time. We pray for the princess in her belly, who will one day be our queen, and we give thanks to Her Grace, the Duchess of Justice, who tends so vigilantly on them both." He had left the sanctuary as soundlessly as she had entered it. She had seen enough. Carnelian House was not far from the Privy Stair. Loth evaded a brace of retainers, both wearing the badge of the Duchess of Justice, and slipped through the unlocked door. He chased a winding stair and emerged in a corridor he knew well, decorated with portraits of ladies of the bedchamber who had served under long-dead queens. A new likeness of a young Arbella Glen had appeared at one end. When he reached the right door, he listened. Silence within. He turned the handle and stepped inside. Candles lit the chamber. His sister was bent over a book. At the sound of the door opening, she startled to her feet. "Courtesy's name!" She snatched her knife from the nightstand, her eyes wide. "Get you gone, knave, or I will cut your heart out. What sends you to my door?" "Fraternal duty," he lowered his head, "and a terrible fear of your wrath if I stayed away a moment longer." The knife fell from her hand and her eyes filled. She ran to him and flung her arms around his neck. "Loth!" Her body heaved with sobs. "Loth!" He drew her into an embrace, close to tears himself. It was only now he held her that he dared believe that he was home. "I could really cut out your heart, Arteloth Beck, abandoning me for months, sneaking in here like a vagabond." Margaret laid her hand on his cheeks. Hers were wet with tears. "And what is that on your face?" "I must insist that the Nighthawk shoulders the blame for my absence, though not for the beard." He kissed her brow. "I will tell you everything later. Meg, Eard is here." "Eard?" Joy sparked in her eyes, then went out. "No, it's too dangerous for both of you." "Where is Sab?" "The royal apartments, I assume." Margaret gripped his shoulder with one hand and used the other to wipe her eyes. "They say she is in confinement because of the pregnancy. Only Roslane is permitted to attend on her, and Crest retainers guard her door." "Where is Combe in all this?" "The Nighthawk took wing a few days ago. Stillwater and Finch too. I have no idea whether it was of their own volition." "What of the other Duke's spiritual?" "They seem to be helping Crest." She looked at the window. "Did you see there is no light up there?" Loth nodded, understanding the import well. "Sir Bran cannot sleep in darkness." "Aye."
Margaret moved to shut the curtains, before that she might deliver her bairn in that cheerless room.
Meg. She turned. There will be no Princess Glorian, Loth said softly. Sab is not with child, and will not be with child again.
Margaret was very still.
How?
She finally asked. Her belly was pierced when the white worm came. His sister groped for her settle.
Now all this begins to make sense, she sat. Crest doesn't want to wait until Sabran dies to take the throne.
Her breath shook. Loth came to sit beside her, giving her time to take it all in.
The nameless one will return, Margaret composed herself. I suppose all we can do now is prepare for it.
And we cannot do that if Innes is divided, a new voice said. Loth rose, with his sword drawn, to see Eard in the doorway.
Margaret let out a wordless sound of relief and went to her. They embraced like sisters.
I must be dreaming, Margaret said into her shoulder. You came back.
You told me we would meet again, Eard held her close.
I did not want to make you a liar. You have a lot of explaining to do, but it can wait,
Margaret drew back.
Eard, Sabran is in the Queen Tower.
Eard bolted the door. Tell me everything. Margaret repeated to her exactly what she had told Loth. As she listened, Eard stood like a statue.
We must reach her, she eventually said.
The three of us will not get far, Loth murmured.
Where are the Knights of the Badi in all this?
The loyal bodyguards of the Queen of Innes.
Loth had not even thought to ask.
I have not seen Captain Lintley in a week, Margaret owned. Some of the others are on guard outside the Queen Tower. Is it not their duty to protect Her Majesty? Eard asked.
They have no reason to suspect the Duchess of Justice of doing her harm. They think Sab is resting.
Then we need to let them know that Sabran is being held against her will. The Knights of the Badi are formidable. With even half of them on our side, we could stamp out the insurrection, Eard said. We should try to find Lintley. Perhaps they have put him in the guardhouse.
We could take the secret route I showed you, said Margaret.
Eard made for the door.
Good.
Wait.
Margaret held out a hand to Loth. Lend me a weapon, brother, or I shall be as much use as a fire in an ice house.
He surrendered his baselard without complaint. Margaret took a candle and led the way down the corridor. She brought them before a portrait of a woman, and when she dragged one side away from the wall, a passage was revealed. Eard climbed into it and gave Margaret a hand. Loth pulled the portrait shut behind them. A draft blew out the candle, leaving them in darkness. All Loth could hear was their breathing. Then Eard snapped her fingers, and a silver-blue flame jumped like a spark from a fire striker. Loth exchanged a glance with his sister as Eard cupped it in her palm.
Not all fire is to be feared, Eard said.
Margaret appeared to steel herself.
You had better make Crest fear it by dawn.
They followed a flight of steps until they reached a way out. Eard pushed it open just a crack.
All clear, she murmured.
Meg, which door?
The closest, Margaret said at once.
When Loth raised his eyebrows at her, she stamped on his foot.
Eard stepped into the unlit passageway and tried the door, to no avail.
Captain Lintley?
She said, voice soft.
When there was no answer, she knocked.
Sir Tharion?
A pause then.
Who goes there?
Tharion!
Margaret joined Eard at the door.
Tharion, it's Meg!
Meg! A muffled oath.
Margaret, you must leave! Crest has had me locked in!
She clicked her tongue.
That sounds like a reason to get you out, fool, not to leave.
Loth glanced down the corridor. If anyone opened the door to the guardhouse, they would have nowhere to hide. Eard knelt beside the door. When she flexed her fingers, the fire drifted to hang beside her like a corpse candle. She studied the keyhole and used her other hand to slide a hairpin from her curls and into the lock. When it clicked, Margaret eased open the door, careful not to let the hinges creak. Inside his chamber, Sir Tharion Lintley stood in a shirt and breeches. Every taper in the room had been burned to a stump. He went straight to Margaret and cupped her cheek with one hand.
Margaret, you must not...
Catching sight of Loth, he started and bowed in his soldierly way.
Saint! Lord Arteloth, I had no idea you had returned, and...
His stance changed.
Mistress Tharion.
Captain Lintley?
Eard still held her flame.
Should I expect you to try and arrest me?
Lintley swallowed.
I wondered if you were the Lady of the Woods herself, he said. The principal secretary's retainers told stories of your witchcraft.
Peace, Margaret touched his arm. I don't yet understand it either, but Eard is my friend.
She returned at great risk to her life to help us, and she brought Loth back to me. A look from her was all it took to soften Lintley.
Combe ordered us to arrest you that night, he said to Eard. Is he in league with Crest?
That I do not know. His morals are questionable, to be sure, but he may not be the true enemy. Eard closed the door. We suspect Her Majesty is being held against her will, and that we have not much time to reach her.
I have already tried. Lintley looked as if all hope had forsaken him, and I shall be banished for it.
What happened?
Rumour had it that you were in league with King Sagoso and had returned to him, but it was so soon after Lord Arteloff vanished, I sensed a deliberate attempt to make Her Majesty vulnerable.
Go on, Eard said.
Her Majesty had not emerged from the Queen Tower since the White Worm came, and there was no light from her window. Dame Joan Dale and I demanded entrance to the Great Bedchamber to reassure ourselves she was well. Crest had us stripped of our armour for disobedience, he said bitterly. Now I am confined here.
What of the other knights of the body? Margaret asked.
Three are also here for protesting.
Not for long, Eard said. How many retainers would we face should we make our move tonight?
Of the 36 retainers Crest has at court, I would guess that about half are armed. She has several knights errant, too.
The Knights of the Body were among the best warriors in Innes, handpicked for their skill. They could defeat a rabble of servants.
Do you think the others are still loyal? Eard said.
Absolutely. Their first allegiance is always to Her Majesty.
Good, she replied. Muster them and go after Crest. Once she is apprehended, her retainers will lay down their arms.
They stole out of the chamber. Eard broke the locks on three other doors, and Lintley whispered the plan to his soldiers. Soon, they stood with Dame Joan Dale, Dame Susan Thatch, and Sir Mark Birchen.
There are not many guards outside the armory. Eard offered Lintley one of her own blades. Retrieve your weapons, but I would advise against armor. It will make you slow and loud. Lintley took the blade.
What will you do?
I will find Her Majesty.
She will be surrounded by retainers in the service of Crest, Lintley reiterated. They were stationed on almost every floor of the Queen Tower when last I was there.
I can deal with them, Lintley shook his head.
I cannot tell if you have lost your wits, Eard, or if you are the knight of courage come again.
Let me go with you, Loth said to her. I can help.
If you think a handful of traitors will keep me from her side, came her immediate answer, you are sorely mistaken.
Then softer, I can do this alone.
The conviction in her words caught him unawares. He had seen her fellow wyverling. She could handle a few retainers.
Then I will go with you, Sir Tharion, he said.
Lintley nodded.
It would be my honour to fight alongside you, Lord Arteloff.
I will go with you too, Margaret said, if you will have me.
I will, Lady Margaret.
Lintley raised a smile.
I will have you.
Their gazes held for a moment longer than necessary. Loth cleared his throat, making Lintley look away.
I still say you will be arrested before you get to the doors, one of the knights of the body said darkly to Eard.
You speak as if it is a certainty.
Eard stood with folded arms.
If any of you wish to turn back, say it now. We can afford no cowardice.
We number the same as the saint and his holy retinue, Margaret said firmly. If the seven of them manage to found a religion, then I sincerely hope the seven of us can rout a few milk-livered knaves.
Eard climbed the ladder of the woodvines up the Queen Tower as she had before. When she was close to the privy kitchen, she pushed off the wall and seized the windowsill. Weakened by her last climb, the woodvines tore away under her boot and collapsed onto the glasshouse far below. She pulled herself through and fell into a crouch. Somewhere below, a bell began to ring. They must have found the body in the well. For Lintley, the alarum was good tidings. He and his knights of the body could take advantage of the distraction to retrieve their swords from the armory. For Eard, however, the outlook was grim. This commotion would raise every retainer in the Queen Tower from bed. Only a few more rooms now stood between her and Sir Bran. The gallery of the Blood Royal was empty. She strode past the portraits of the women of the House of Berethnet. Painted green eyes seemed to follow her as she approached the stair. There were differences between the queens. A curl to the hair, a dimple, a well-defined jaw, but each of them looked so much like the others they might all have been sisters. Her siden thrummed, and she could hear up to the next floor. Footsteps were approaching. By the time a group of retainers in green stormed down the stair, she was pressed against the tapestry, out of sight. The bell had drawn them away from the royal apartments.
This was her chance to reach Sir Bran. Upstairs was the corridor she had lived in as Lady of the Bedchamber. Ea had stopped when she heard a voice from far below.